Hello, everyone. My name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your host tonight for this important update from the City of Mississauga. This is the third session the City has organized to address concerns about the COVID-19 pandemic and to inform the public about what the City is doing to protect their health and safety. We will also answer questions from Mississauga residents. Joining me this evening is Mayor Bonnie Crombie, along with a group of panelists from the City of Mississauga, Peel Region Public Health, Trillium Health Partners, Peel Regional Police, and Peel Regional Paramedics. City councilors and senior staff are also available to answer questions. Before we hear more from our speakers, let me start by explaining how a telephone town hall works. Right now, residents from all over Mississauga are answering their phones and connecting to the discussion. We will hear from Mayor Crombie shortly about updates on measures by the city. After that, it will be your turn. You will have a chance to ask your questions of the mayor and our panel and to raise issues that you think are critical at this time. You can get in line to ask a question at any time by pressing *3 on your phone keypad. You'll then be put through to an operator who will take down your question and put you in line. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your questions will be read out loud by me, the moderator. If you have a question about issues discussed during tonight's COVID-19 information session, but don't get a chance to ask it during our call, you may find updates online. For health questions related to COVID-19, visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus. For questions about city service impacts, visit mississauga.ca/coronavirus. Our emphasis tonight will be on providing important updates and hearing the questions residents want to ask the city and health officials. Here are a few things to keep in mind when you ask a question tonight. When using your phone to ask a question, press *3 on your keypad, and you'll be routed to an operator who will ask you to provide your name and the nature of your question. For those of you joining us online, please type your question into the question field. Your question will be read out loud by me, the moderator. Please try to keep your question as brief as possible. There are a lot of people on the line, and we want to try to get to as many of your questions as we can. Please ensure your question is related to COVID-19 and how the city and local community partners are working to protect residents. Again, my name is Jody Shanoff, and I'm pleased to be your moderator for this telephone town hall with Mayor Crombie, staff from the City of Mississauga, and local health officials. It's my job to keep this conversation moving smoothly and to make sure we get to hear your questions and have as much discussion as possible. Before we start getting to your questions, I would like to invite the mayor and Dr. Lowe to say a few words. Mayor Crombie, what would you like Mississauga residents to know about the work happening to protect residents and businesses of Mississauga during this pandemic?
Thank you, Jody. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight for our third COVID-19 teletown hall meeting. Tonight, we will provide you with an update on our efforts responding to COVID-19 and to take your questions. This is our third town hall since the pandemic began. I'd like to thank those who have joined me on this call and have made themselves available to answer your questions. First and foremost, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our Medical Officer of Health for Peel Region Public Health, Michelle DeManuel, President and CEO of Trillium Health Partners, Chief of Police Nish Duriappa, Chief of Peel Paramedics, Peter Dundas, Interim CAO of the Region of Peel, Nancy Polsonelli, and my counselors, Counselor Stephen Dasko from Ward 1, Counselor Karen Rass from Ward 2, Counselor Chris Fonseca, Ward 3, Counselor John Kovac, Ward 4, Counselor Ron Starr, Ward 6, Counselor Dipika DeMerla, Ward 7, Counselor Matt Mahoney, Ward 8, and Counselor Pat Sato, Ward 9. As well as the city's leadership team are with me tonight, led by Janice Baker, our city manager and chief administrative officer, Tim Beckett, not only our fire chief, but our director of emergency management for the city of Mississauga, Gary Kent, our commissioner of corporate services and our chief financial officer, Paul Mitchum, our commissioner for community services and city, for our city, Andrew Whittemore, our Commissioner of Planning and Building for our city, and Jeff Wright, our Commissioner of Transportation and Works. So thank you for joining me. As we enter May, I want to reflect on where we find ourselves 8 weeks into this pandemic. I know this is taking a toll on everyone, mentally, physically, and emotionally. I'm thankful for your sacrifices and for doing your part to slow the spread of the virus. You have helped keep our hospitals at a manageable capacity so people with severe cases of COVID can get the treatment that they need. Your work has helped keep our frontline healthcare workers safe and prevented them from being overwhelmed. While we know that we have likely reached the peak of community spread, we can't take our foot off the gas. In Mississauga, cases continue to increase, albeit at single-digit increases per day. Citywide, we have 1,444 cases, and that is 11 new cases over yesterday. This is promising, but it's not enough. There are still dozens of people dying in Ontario every day. Last week marked the deadliest day in Ontario with 87 deaths. The numbers speak for themselves. We are not in the clear yet. Our vulnerable populations, and particularly seniors in our long-term care homes, continue to be devastated by this crisis. We have 10 long-term care and retirement homes with 370 cases and, unfortunately, 59 deaths. They're struggling and need our support and resources now more than ever. We've made significant progress and our efforts are paying off. Our job is far from over. We know this isn't easy. We cannot let our guard down. A second wave is entirely possible. Until we have a reliable vaccine, this virus could come back with a vengeance. Let's do this right, and let's do it the first time. We're looking to the future and preparing what reopening our city will look like and how we recover from this crisis. We do not yet have a firm timeline for reopening. No one does. But it's important that when we do, that we're ready. There will be multiple stages to the recovery. It seems certain that business will not return to as usual on day one. Physical distancing, increased hygiene, and sanitation will remain part of our daily lives indefinitely. We have followed the guidance of public health experts to date, and we will continue to take our lead from them. Before I turn it over to the experts, please, I know the weather is starting to get nicer and people are getting antsy to get outside, but we need you to hang in there for just a little bit longer. Please, I ask that you continue to respect our park amenity closures, that is our playgrounds, basketball, tennis, cricket courts, skateboard parks, and pretty much any other facility, including our playgrounds, inside our parks. Don't litter masks or latex gloves outside grocery stores or strip malls. And lastly, no family gatherings or backyard barbecues until the rules are relaxed by the province. If you are caught disrespecting COVID orders, you could face a fine ranging from $365 for littering or up to $1,000. I want to thank you for your patience and your cooperation during these uncertain times and for listening closely to the advice of our healthcare professionals by staying at home and by limiting trips out to just the essentials. Your actions are making a difference and you're saving lives. Please be kind to one another. Do not take more than you need and check in on those who are the most vulnerable in our community. Call our seniors regularly, please. Let's stay strong. It's the only way to prevent a second wave. I have no doubt our city will get through these tough times and emerge stronger than ever before. Before I turn it over to Dr. Lowe, I note that it's National Youth Week this week. We have several youth from the Mississauga Action Committee and MIAC and youth across Mississauga joining us tonight. I want to welcome them, and I look forward to speaking to all of you and to answering your questions as well. I will now turn it over to Dr. Lowe to provide us with an update. Thank you, Dr. Lowe. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, esteemed councillors, colleagues, and everyone on the line, Mississaugans. It's a great opportunity for me to be here to provide you an update on the COVID-19 pandemic in our community. As of noon today, we have 2,736 cases of COVID-19 in the region of Peel and 145 deaths. That includes 1,444 cases in Mississauga, 103 of whom have tragically passed away. As our battle against the pandemic continues, however, I do want to tell you about changes that are happening in our community. Firstly, how the pandemic is changing in the region and right here in Mississauga. In our community, we are continuing to see new cases of COVID-19 slow. And while I remain concerned, as the mayor does, about our senior setting, I am heartened that the outbreaks are being controlled. Some homes in our region have even started to come out of outbreak, and together with our hospital and healthcare partners, we have managed to test all of the high-risk long-term care homes, all of the long-term care homes in our region, all 28 long-term care homes in Mississauga, Brampton, and Caledon. We are now moving on to other senior and congregate settings throughout our region to test for COVID-19 and get ahead of the virus there. Our hospitals do continue to see severity, though as I understand it, that continues to stabilize along with the mortality rates in the community. All of this means that our curve is flattening and that we are moving into the eye of the storm. To date, the work that we have all done together has averted the worst, though we do stand with those who have loved lost ones and also with all of those who have sacrificed to make this happen. What we have done in sacrificing, though, is no small feat. By coming together, we have saved lives, controlled spread, and mitigated potential trauma for a generation of healthcare and long-term care workers and first responders. The community's efforts to support our own work behind the scenes at public health through working with numerous partners to direct outbreak response and broad testing, wide-ranging case and contact management, and public education enforcement that is guided by data and evidence continues. However, I want to be very clear about what flattening the curve means. Flattening the curve does not mean that everything is back to normal. Flattening the curve simply means that we have controlled the fire. We are now in the driver's seat, and it means that the choices that we make at this point matter all the more. This is why we took the actions that we did. In March, when we slowed down our lives during the golden period for disease control that I spoke of, the fire was at the precipice of racing out of control in our community after having burned through many other parts of the world. As Dr. Anthony Fauci in the United States has said, in situations like that, we don't dictate the timeline, the virus does. However, by taking decisive action and flattening the curve, we have taken control of the timeline back from COVID-19. Our next moves will dictate how this fire burns going forward. And that brings me to my second change in context. I know that many of us in our community have been at this for 8 weeks now. I also know that this week aside, it is starting to get nice and the summer is beckoning. I also recognize that certain seasonal businesses have been given the green light to start up again. But our guidelines and recommendations have not changed. We must continue to proceed gradually and carefully to ensure that spread remains controlled in our community. We must continue to physically distance when we are out and about, 2 meters, wear a mask, and practice regular, meticulous hand hygiene. Wearing a mask where physical distancing is not possible is the recommendation. We must also continue to stay home as much as possible, working from home as we can, and leaving only for essential reasons, meaning groceries, gas, prescriptions, seeking medical attention, and exercise. On that, if you need emergent medical attention, please attend at a doctor's office or a hospital. They are open for telephone and in-person consults for many health issues beyond COVID-19. You will get the care that you need if you have an emergency. If you need to exercise, please ensure that you're maintaining physical distance. And I want to be clear that exercising is not a reason to visit or day trip to popular trails or local attractions, particularly where other people may be congregating. Please go outside and enjoy the weather, but stay close to home. The scenic hotspot you visit might become a viral hotspot if we aren't careful. It only takes one. We have done so well. We must keep this up because we are now in control. As the curve flattens, we lead. We have contained the fire. So by all means, enjoy the weather and exercise, but be smart. Stay apart, stay close to home, and save for any other essentials. Just stay home as much as you still can. What we're doing is working. We must persevere. The fire is still present, but what we do now will determine how this story ends. So with that, I'll thank you and pass it back to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. For those of you just joining us, my name is Jody Shanoff. I'm your moderator for this evening's telephone town hall. I'm pleased to be here with Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie, staff from the city, and local health officials to discuss the measures the city has in place to control the spread of COVID-19. Just a reminder to our listeners, you can press star 3 on your phone at any time to get in line and ask a question of our panelists. Or for those of you joining us online, please type your question into the comment section on your screen. We're going to go to our first question now. Mayor Crombie, what are the city's plans for returning to normal operations?
That's a great question, and I'm sure everyone's wondering that. Of course, Mississauga continues to work hard in the face of this pandemic. Our council continues to meet, and I'm very proud of that. We were one of the first councils to embrace the online meetings and electronic voting, and we continue to meet virtually each and every week and where possible. And we're now extending that to some of the other committees so that they too can continue to do the important work that they're doing. We're continuing to monitor the pandemic situation as it unfolds and act always in the best interests of our residents and our local businesses. The city is actively looking at possible scenarios for a gradual and phased return to normal operations. We will be following the recommendations of Peel Public Health and the other health authorities to guide us as we prepare a framework for recovery. We continue to partner and work closely with our government partners, particularly the provincial government. It is the premier that has given us the list of essential and non-essential businesses and when they can reopen and when who should be shut. And other health agencies, as well as we look at to see our neighboring cities so we can have similar responses at similar times and keep it uniform. We want to keep our city safe, and we want to discuss how we can work on an economic restart and recovery plan as well. I'm going to also ask our city manager, Janice Baker, to respond. What are your ideas, Janice, on how we get back to the new normal with respect to our operations of the city?
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor, and for the question to the citizen for the question. Yes, we are very much, as you've said, turning our minds to the recovery phase and recognizing that we need to pay attention to a number of pillars as we are going forward. We need to look at the whole community and the impacts that the pandemic has had on our community and, of course, our community facilities in particular, our community centers, libraries, and to have a responsible plan for reopening those, paying attention to the guidance from public health authorities. I think it is certainly fair to say that citizens will, in the short to medium term, notice that we have to make some differences in the way we operate in order to be in compliance with guidance from Peel Public Health. And so we are now looking at how we do that. We know that from a corporate perspective, so many of our employees are working from home, and we want to make sure that employees can return back to work and to the workplace in a safe manner. We have many of our essential workers already who are working using safe work practices, and we will ensure that we extend those to our staff who are currently working from home. The economic impacts of the pandemic are very much on our minds, and so we want our recovery plan to pay attention to those, and also the financial impacts, and you've mentioned those. We have seen significant drops in revenue as a consequence of some of the adjustments that we've had to make. So we are bringing a report to council next week to start to look at the framework of how recovery will happen. And we will be looking for sure to engage our citizens and our businesses to seek input into our recovery plan. Hopefully that answers the question, and I'll turn it back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that. Our next question has come to us online. It's from Chris, and Chris's question is the following. J.C. Saddington Park is a hot spot for people to come and hang out. There were tons of people here Sunday, and not all were following the rules. How do you decide how many officers are assigned to each park?
That is a great question. I'm going to give you a general overview of what the enforcement highlights have been, and then I'll pass it over to, I think, Gary, because I believe enforcement is under you. So certainly we have 157 bylaw officers. We beefed up our enforcement and deputized some of our security officers so that we could respond to those weekend blitzes. And of course, we are out at all the 10 hot spots around the city each and every weekend, and we're also responding to complaints. There have been 1,700 complaints called in from all of you to 311. 25,000 people have been stopped to be educated on the rules and turned back. And we've even turned back 23,000 cars at our parking lots of our facilities. During this time, we have issued 111 COVID-related tickets, ranging from $365 to $750. 64 of them for the COVID-related emergency, 41 for PPE littering. If you can believe it, people are still discarding their latex gloves and their masks in grocery store parking lots and parks on the roadsides, and then 6 park bylaws. I know over the weekend, there were 6 tickets issued on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, 2 on Monday for the 211, because it's a cumulative number. I was quite surprised at Sunday because it was a beautiful day and I had the opportunity to drive through Port Credit, and boy, oh boy, did I see a lot of cars and a lot of people and too many people and lots of cyclists and bikers out on the road. So I was quite surprised there were only 3 tickets issued, and we'll let them respond in a second. But so, let me give you a few of the highlights of who did receive a penalty. There was a small group of youngsters who broke into Korea Park. Of course, Korea Park is closed, but they do have the beautiful cherry blossoms there, and I believe the purpose was to take a photograph for social media. And then it was one expensive photo, let me tell you, because they were fined $750. We did see a house party of 8 to 10 people in the north end of the city in the Malton area. There was a family having a picnic on a basketball court. We've seen people entering the basketball or the tennis courts to play cricket in the past. Also using skate parks, also using the leash-free dog parks, and unfortunately those are closed as well. PPE littering tickets outside the grocery stores. As I mentioned, some of the non-essential businesses that were operating was a non-essential construction at a commercial property. We have issued tickets to a beauty salon, an international career college, a vape shop, a home improvement store, online auction store, jewelry store, shisha shop, and a balloon and party store. But it, for me, it is the discarded PPE that is very concerning, and we've issued 41 of those tickets. And we all have seen illegal dumping in our parks. There has been a huge increase, 200% increase in illegal dumping in the parks. And I don't know why people would dispose of household waste in the park. The bins are there to block the entrances to the parking lots of the parks. It's not sanitary. You are allowed additional trash, 2 bags on collection day, because we recognize people are at home. So, you know, all in all, kind of quite concerning. Gary, over to you. What about Jack Saddington Park and some of the other hot spots around the city? And what did you and your crew observe over the weekend, particularly on Sunday, which was a bright, hot, almost quasi-summer day? Over to you, Gary.
Well, thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Chris, for your question. You know what, I don't think I can speak specifically to Saddington Park, but what I can tell you is how we allocate resources, which was your question. So we've got a mobile workforce. We've got about 180 staff, and that's really a partnership, not just with permanent staff in corporate security, but also our enforcement team, which my colleague Jeff Wright is in charge of. To that, we've supplemented more mobile staff from the private sector. So for example, we are manning our parking lots to discourage people, and the mayor gave you the stats from the people who are still coming, over 2,000 cars at the weekend. We're really monitoring that. We've got some signs behind it, and we're really dependent on the public reporting into C11, and we monitor those parks from that perspective. But I have to tell you, it isn't just the waterfront parks, and that's been the biggest surprise to us. It really is throughout the community. So if the community can keep calling in 311, that helps us. And if things do get out of hand, then we've got a great partnership with Peel Police where we can call them in as well. So we are doing other things. The swings are tied up. We've got barriers. We've got signage. But really, we do need the public's cooperation to follow the rules. And let's get through this together. So I hope that answered your question. And over to you, Jody.
Commissioner, our next question comes to us live. It's from Gary, and Gary's got a question about property taxes. Gary, go ahead with your question.
Oh, hello, Bonnie. Yes, I'd like to know, I heard from on the news that I think it was Clarington or Ajax had offered their citizens or their property taxpayers a rebate. Considering the fact that various things have been closed around the city and, you know, we're not utilizing full service. So will there be a possibility for homeowners to get a property tax rebate this year?
Gary, that is a really important question, and I thank you for it. We have a very compassionate council. We have deferred your property taxes. We've deferred payments on a number of things. We have made our transit free, and we've included rear door boarding. We've deferred your stormwater charges, and at the region of Peel, your water utility rates have been deferred as well. At this point, we are $43 million in a deficit position. We are going through about $20 million a month, including $7.5 million based on our lost revenue for transit. I will caution as well that we are the one level of government that cannot run a deficit. We have no ability to recover the revenue that we aren't earning right now, and we have already laid off 2,000 staff that would be otherwise staffing our recreation centers, our libraries, our arenas, and our cultural facilities. I will say that as well, we are the level of government that is paying for essential workers. We are paying our regional government, our police, our fire, our paramedic, our transit drivers, and our at our long-term care facilities, we're paying our PSWs and to maintain our facilities as well. So we have very high costs, we have no revenue, and we are running a deficit, which we are not permitted to do. But I will ask Gary, because I did see Clarington, which is a very small municipality, I did see that they were doing that rebate. And Gary, I wondered if you had any comments, or Janice Baker as well. Gary?
Sure, Madam Mayor, I can jump in there. I actually spoke to Clarington. They debated, and they've asked for a report to come back. My understanding is that they're going to report back by June 1st. If that happened recently, I apologise, I don't know that. So I think that debate is still out there. And they were looking at, the concept was a limited amount of money. And then there's a clause in some of the legislation about undue hardship. So they were exploring that. It's a very high bar to meet, even if you can afford it. And I think the mayor has laid out, unfortunately, that that's not the position that council would be in this year. You know, to the mayor's point, we continue to run a lot of essential services, and we are going to be a deficit this year. So to give away some of the revenue, I think, would be probably not the right thing to do at this time. Over to you, Janice or Jody. Maybe Jody.
Happy to take that back.
It can go back to Jody. I don't. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We'll move on to the next question. It came to us online from Grace. And Grace, her question is as follows. I'm really afraid that businesses will be allowed to open too early and things will be much worse. What timeline is set for business openings?
It's a great question, Grace, and we're hearing it from both sides. So obviously, the Premier has a kind of a roadmap, but certainly not a calendar of how he would like things to proceed. And I can see that there's a pull and a push and a tug at the same time. There are communities in Ontario, small communities in rural areas, where there are no more COVID cases yet, and the larger municipalities across the GTA, we see that because of the density, we maybe have peaked, we haven't plateaued, and we still need at least 14 days of declining numbers before we start opening things. So there is a real it's a really difficult question, but I will ask Dr. Lowe to address this issue of when is the right time for businesses to open. We have to take this very slowly. We need a plan, we need to be deliberate, and we need to be very measured is the answer I would give you. But I personally would want to wait to see that we had declining numbers so that, as I said earlier, that we're controlling the virus isn't controlling us. Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and that's exactly right in terms of the answer that you've provided. From my perspective on the technical side of things, it's really a balance between two sets of numbers that we're looking at. So certainly looking at decreasing cases, also looking at decreasing mortality and also stabilization of healthcare utilization as well as outbreaks in various facilities, all of which, as Madam Mayor has pointed out, is starting to happen, but we are by no means done with. And that goes back to what I was saying earlier in my opening remarks, the need for us to stay the course and certainly, yeah, enjoy the warm weather outside, but to remember that we're still very much putting the fire break in before we start to loosen and open things up. The other set of numbers that we're very carefully tracking, continuing to ramp up on, is basically how we actually fight the virus in the public health and healthcare system. So making sure we do have that capacity to cope with any increase or surge in cases in our hospitals and healthcare settings. And I know our partners on the line here have done a fantastic job of preparing for that. And certainly for us in public health, continuing with the province to make sure that we have adequate testing capacity so that we can test quickly and isolate quickly as well as cases and contacts, and also having that capacity to actually conduct what is known as contact tracing, which is something that we've been doing pretty much since January, since word of this came out in China. But just with the sheer numbers that have been seen, have had challenges, at least in the initial wave of this outbreak, in making sure that we've got there. But we have a target from the provincial government. We have a target that we are largely meeting, which is to get to new positive cases within 90% of new cases within 24 hours. So it's really a matter of ramping up our capacity on that side around testing, contact tracing, care if people need it, and also making sure that the other line in terms of death severity and cases is dropping so that we always have way more testing and healthcare capacity than we do need as deaths and cases or mortality are there. And the last thing that I'll also add is one other thing that will go into any consideration on opening is certainly recognizing, there are health impacts related with the slowdown in the community, certainly with lost employment, mental health, and all those other pieces. That will factor into it as well somewhat, because we do recognize essentially we're threading a needle between two health impacts, the risk of the immediate and the acute with the pandemic if we were to let everything go back to normal, and certainly the delayed impacts that have been mentioned there, related to the ongoing measures that were taken. There is no perfect solution here, unfortunately. There are no winners in a pandemic, but we have averted the worst, at least on the pandemic side. And you'll start to see measures taken, I think, in the coming weeks that will allow for ongoing physical distancing while balancing out some of the other health impacts that we know are associated with people staying at home more. So it's a really great question. There is no firm timeline. We're going to see those two sets of numbers as the one decreases, cases and deaths and severity, and then as the other increases in terms of testing, et cetera, all with an eye to balancing out the ongoing curtailments, as well as the fire that is still very much burning in our community. So lots of complex things that go into the decision, but I hope that helps to clear up the various moving parts. So thank you, and back to you, Jody.
Thank you very much. A reminder to our listeners this evening, if you'd like to ask a question live of our panel, you can dial *3 on your phone keypad and you'll be put into a queue and given a chance to ask your question live. People who are joining us online can type your question into the question field on your screen, and that will also be put in the queue to be asked of our panel this evening. Our next question has come to us online. It's from Ted, and Ted says the following. I live in the Square One area, and there's been an increase of drag racing in the late evening. Is there anything the city can do to enforce this? Can residents call it in?
This is a great question, and I'm going to pass it off to our very own Chief Nish Duriapa. I got it. Chief.
Thank you, Your Worship. And just for clarity, my children can't say our last name either, so that's all good. And to Ted, thank you for the question. I, you know, we as a police agency have clearly been monitoring the trends of road safety during this pandemic time. We know that the volume of traffic has decreased, which often changes driver behavior and allows people to take more liberties on the roadway. And that has been something that our officers, which I should mention, are still out in the same volume and numbers that have always been. Our traffic units and road safety division is still out fully monitoring this, if not at all, enhanced traffic safety. So statistically, I think just the public would be interested in this. We have seen almost a 100% increase in street racing offenses, which by law is 50 kilometers over the speed limit or more. And that is what we are noticing on the roadways. That said, we have seen a reduction in volume of traffic, which means there's less motor vehicle collisions, less overall tickets being sent out. So to Ted, I think first things first, when road safety is one of the number one community-related issues, regardless of the time of year, pandemic or not, for all of us, always, always, always call it into us. If it's not an emergency situation, which we'll let you to discern, obviously 911 is there for you. You can call our non-emergency number. However, there is a way, if from your mobile device and if you're not driving, you're able to access peelpolice.ca. You can actually file a road watch or a online report of a traffic infraction, as always. If we'd appreciate if you had vehicle descriptors, but that can be reported. And our response is unmitigated. It's still the same way that we've always done. And we are very alive to the fact that road safety is a number one priority for our region. We still are quite proud of the fact that for the population that we have, our roads are safe. And as Dr. Lawrence Lowell once said, you know, we do encourage people to stay home unless you really have to, which also does aid the response. I'll pass it back to the moderator.
Thank you very much, Chief. Our next question comes to us live. Jane is on the line, and Jane's got a question about the city's homeless. Jane, go ahead with your question.
Hi. I wonder what's being done or what's being will be done to help the homeless in Mississauga, which is quite, there are, for people that don't know, there are quite a lot of homeless people in Mississauga, but they tend to be hidden. That's my question.
Thank you for your question. And of course, we do have a plan and we're very concerned ourselves. And our acting CAO at the Region of Peel is going to share that with us. Nancy Pulcinelli, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you so much for the question. It is a very important one. We know that our homeless population is particularly vulnerable at this time. And in response early on, the region has mobilized a program that addresses not only the housing, but the social as well as the medical needs of individuals who are homeless. So what we've done is we've enhanced shelter capacity using hotels. This has allowed us to take on and support more individuals, but it also has helped us enable physical distancing, screening, and cleaning of the facilities so that we reduce the spread of COVID or the risk of the spread. Through the development of an isolation and recovery program, those that are at highest risk who are self-isolated are supported with additional medical care, medical services of a primary care physician and a nurse practitioner. And those who contract COVID-19 are cared for at a separate location. In addition, we have expanded our street outreach program. So in doing this, we've increased the number of drop-in centers, but also the hours of operations. And we're handing out supplies and food vouchers. And the last that we've done is early on, we convened a community response table, and it's an amazing collaboration with the region, our partners in the municipalities, as well as over 90 community agencies. And through this table, we're able to work with the community agencies to problem solve, collaborate, and provide solutions so that they can too help us in supporting our population that are homeless right now, but also supporting our seniors and other areas of the populations that are vulnerable. So those are some of the things that we are doing at the region in collaboration with a number of partners. Back to you, Jody.
Thanks very much. A reminder to listeners to dial *3 on your phone keypad, where you'll be able to speak with an operator to talk about your question and get into the queue so you can pose your question live of our panel this evening. Our next question comes to us live. Michal is on the phone, and he's got a question about testing for COVID. Go ahead, Michal.
Hello. How many tests are being done in Mississauga every day?
Michal, that's a great question. And you remember a few weeks back, Premier Ford was very upset that we weren't doing 13,000 tests a day, and maybe we were not where we should be. But I know that we are today. In fact, I know we're testing more than 14,000 tests each and every day. And I know that Michelle DeManuel, the CEO of our hospitals, Trillium Health Partners, is on the line, and she's going to tell you exactly how many tests each day, how many people are positive, including the residents and the staff. Michelle, can you respond to Niall?
Sure, Madam Mayor. Thank you so much, and thank you for the question. I can certainly respond to the activity that we've had at the hospital. We have tested almost 16,000 people in our city over the last several weeks. On any given day, we're testing between 300 to 500 patients, both inpatients and patients coming through our emergency department, et cetera, that would present in a way that would require a test. And of those 16,000 patients that we have tested, we've had 1,158 people test positive. And we've had, as of today, we have 116 patients in our hospital who are being treated for COVID-19. Madam Mayor, you may want to ask Lawrence about testing for Mississauga as a whole.
Sure thing, can do that. Over to you, Dr. Lowe.
No, thank you very much, Michelle and Madam Mayor. So as you know, tests are actually reported at the provincial level out of the Public Health Ontario Laboratory. However, I can share that we at Peel Public Health have still been waiting on a request that was recently made to have those numbers released to our health unit on a more regular basis. That said, at the provincial level, there have been 352,714 tests completed, and in the past day, 10,000 tests also completed. I can also share, as I shared in my initial remarks, that our focus has really been on stemming the outbreaks that are occurring in our senior settings, and that there are 28 long-term care homes throughout the region of Peel, for which we have conducted surveillance testing and swabbing on every staff and resident in those homes, and certainly acting on the results. So we are testing widely, testing broadly, and making use of the additional provincial testing capacity that has been brought online in line with both the Premier's, the Minister of Health, and the Chief Medical Officers of Health direction. So thank you very much, and back to you, Jody.
Dr. Lowe. Our next question comes to us live from Daniel. Daniel's on the phone, and he's got questions about boats and marinas in Mississauga. Daniel, go ahead with your question, please.
Well, hi.
Hello, Daniel.
Hi. Thank you. So I understand that the public marinas are not open, and will there be a chance that they will be open? And if so, what provisions are being made to keep with the guidelines now that the Ontario government has put in place? For example, you go to a public marina, there's washrooms there. Are they being sanitized? Sometimes you tie off your boats and you launch and, will they be open this summer? Basically.
Well, the good news is that the Premier announced that on May 4th, which was yesterday on Monday, that marinas and golf courses both can bring their staff back to start doing the preparation work for them to, I suppose, reopen in the next or one of the first phases of reopening. I'm sure I can see the golf courses doing the kind of work on the greens that's necessary, and certainly in the marinas, getting them cleaned and sanitized, all in the hope that they will be used this summer. I guess I'm being hopeful. But our commissioner, Paul Mitchum, is on the phone. He's our commissioner of community services, and I think he has a better handle on, maybe he's got that crystal ball. Paul, when are they going to open?
Thank you very much, Mayor Crombie, and thank you, Daniel, for your question on the marinas. The mayor's right. It came really to us last Friday with a number of other provincial announcements around some gradual reopening of businesses. But at the same time, the premier asked that we authorize really that we get ready, but not to open golf courses and marinas. So on the golf course side, we have brought back staff. And they have begun the normal process of turf management, greens preparations, and so on. And similarly in the marinas. So we're in the boat compounds as we speak, removing covers, removing the plastic film so that we don't get a buildup of water. And we're beginning now finally to drop boats into the water. So we're in on marinas at least a ready, set position, but we haven't yet been given the final authorization from the province to go. So waiting for that word, we're in a state of readiness. And of course, all of our plans then would address the concerns that you raised with respect to the sanitization of shower and change facilities and so on. So we'll be looking at all of those measures and determining same through best practices and through consultation with the Medical Officer of Health and other marinas across the province. Thank you, Daniel, for your question, and back to the moderator.
Commissioner, a reminder to those of you joining us on the call this evening, if you've got a question of the panel with respect to COVID-19 and initiatives by the city and the region to stem the spread, please dial *3 on your phone keypad and you'll be put into a queue where you can ask your question live. Those of you joining us online, you can type your question into the question field on your screen, and that will be queued as well to be asked of our panelists. Our next question comes to us live from Miriam, and Miriam's got a question about city transit buses. Miriam, go ahead.
Good evening, everybody. My question is for you guys, what is the city doing to protect city buses during this COVID-19 pandemic?
Hi, Miriam. It's Mayor Crombie. We're doing quite a bit to protect our residents, but also to protect our drivers, which we care about deeply. We have rear door boarding, and we've gated off the front of the buses. They can wear their own masks, or we are providing masks should they want them. And we're providing a plexiglass screen in the front, which will protect them even further once we go back to front door boarding. And our Commissioner Jeff Wright, who is our Commissioner of Transportation and Works, I know that he would like to respond further. Jeff, over to you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. And to answer your question, Mary, the city is doing quite a bit to both protect operators, but also to protect passengers during this pandemic. So we started off by applying an antimicrobial spray on the bus. That's to protect the surface and all touch points. And that's a long-lasting spray that will last up to a year. The other thing we're doing is, Mayor Crombie mentioned, to protect operators. We are wiping down the workstations for the operators. We are supplying operators with masks and hand sanitizer for their own personal protection. Mayor Crombie also mentioned that we have moved to rear door boarding only. So passengers are asked, because of physical distancing, to avoid using the front door. However, if there is an accessibility requirement, then the front door boarding is provided for that accessibility requirement. In addition to the rear door boarding, we've also reduced capacity on the bus itself. So as an example, a 40-foot bus typically has 50 people during peak periods. That's been reduced to 12 people by taping off seats, and the operator is monitoring that. That's about a 75% reduction in the capacity on board the bus itself. And as Mayor Crombie also mentioned, we are also outfitting all of our buses with a shield made of a plexiglass tight material. It's to provide a quick solution to protect the operator even further from a potential biohazard. So, you know, droplets or that type of material as passengers could potentially board the bus. So that is being put in place to allow us to resume front door boarding, which will ultimately get us back to a position of collecting fares again. So that's part of that challenge. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of the overview of the protection on MyWay during this pandemic. So with that, I will turn it back to Jody. Thank you very much.
Commissioner, our next question comes to us online from Curtis. And Curtis is the following. Mayor Crombie, thanks to you and your team for controlling the spread of the virus and flattening the curve. Are there restrictions that apply to backyard barbecues?
Thank you, and thank you for the question. We really have to thank all of Mississaugans who are doing their part and who are following the guidelines outlined to us by our Dr. Lowe. And the risk with the backyard barbecues, of course, is that it causes people to gather, and people more than five unrelated adults. And why don't I pass it off to the guy who set the rules, Dr. Lawrence Lowe, our public officer of health. Sorry, Dr. Lowe, over to you.
Thank you so much, Your Worship. It's a really great question. Anyone who knows me knows that I really enjoy my social gatherings, and I have. It's been hard. I've got a lot of friends. I had a regular. I've had a regular karaoke night. I've had some trivia nights that I've had to sort of give up on, and certainly with my children, you know, seeing grandparents, parents, play dates. Everything is pretty much through Zoom, which hasn't done wonders for screen time, as you all know, when it comes to the health perspective as well. But largely the challenge is, as Madam Mayor has absolutely identified it, which is if you're getting together, you are expanding your bubble. And really, to a large extent right now, benefit from with limiting our bubbles as much as possible is that it actually limits any possibility for transmission. So once you start hanging out with other people, you're hanging out with all the other potential people that they may have come in contact with, in close contact with in the past, you know, 1 or 2 weeks. And so then the question is, did they shop at the same grocery store as you? Did they maybe go and have another sneaky backyard barbecue somewhere else? It makes things a little bit more challenging in creating potential chains of transmission. So for the time being, as we're asking people to continue doing the great stuff that we're doing to slow the spread, I hope you all join me in sort of eschewing a bit more of a social life and focusing on really sort of staying and making fun at home with your immediate household as you're able. And certainly for those that are isolated, lonely, there are resources. And today's National Mental Health Week, I know the province has launched a virtual mental health platform, certainly for people who may be struggling with loneliness and isolation, recognizing that obviously virtual is not necessarily an option for everyone. Making your own fun at home, but also making more virtual fun, trying to sort of reach out and at least limit your interactions and connections that way. Incidentally, it also makes it easier that in the event that you are unfortunately diagnosed with COVID-19, one thing that we do as public health is we actually trace all the contacts that you may have come in contact with to advise them to isolate. And that's actually, it makes our job and your job a lot easier when there haven't been that many people that you've come in close contact with during the time that you may have been communicable. So, you know, certainly it's our strong recommendation to really stick to the essentials, exercise, sticking close to home, and staying within the bubble that your house is. And as I said earlier, I'm hoping with the weather getting nicer, and if we do get this thing under control, then we may be able to start opening the bubble up a bit more. But unfortunately for now, not quite yet. So thank you very much, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Very much, Doctor. On a related note, our next questions come to us online from Betty. And Betty asks, are there plans to use automated contact tracing tools in Mississauga?
It's a great question, Betty. So I think the two most important things are, well, other than keeping safe physical distance and washing your hands, et cetera, the most important things from a public health standpoint are testing, doing the testing, and then the contact tracing. And this isn't very new for us. And why doesn't Dr. Lowe catch your breath? And can you just, you just referenced contact tracing. I wonder if you may go into a little bit longer of an explanation on what goes into contact tracing.
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you very much for the question. Contact tracing is bread and butter public health. We have been doing contact tracing since it launched, since we received word of the virus coming out in January, and since Ontario had its first case January 25th. Certainly for us, our first case came a fair bit later, March 5th here in the Region of Peel, but ever since case number one showed up on March 5th, we have been aggressively contact tracing. And what I will say about contact tracing is it really consists of three parts. First of all, we do an exposure assessment because we're trying to figure out where the person may have got it from. Second of all, you do case management, which is basically you isolate the case, the individual who has come with a COVID positive result, and making sure they're home and making sure we check in on them on a regular basis, just seeing how their symptoms are progressing. And then the third piece, which is the contact tracing, is you try to figure out when this individual may have been communicable, and during what time, during that time, who are all the people that they may have come in contact with? And so to a large extent, automated apps are things that have been used around the world, probably as a useful adjunct for those. And certainly I know that Alberta has also launched an app. I know that at the provincial level, there are discussions currently around various ways to augment contact tracing, whether it's through the online testing portal where people, if they get a positive test, they can voluntarily enter some information or through the deployment of an app. But we do have to remember that application has a number of limitations and considerations as well. Certainly it doesn't replace the hard thinking that goes into what our public health nurses and our Peel public health staff have been doing and actually trying to build out the chain of transmission and looking for common exposures between people. Certainly, there are privacy considerations. We do want to make sure that people's information remains private. I think where we've seen these apps have a lot of success have been in other countries which have a very different approach to personal liberty. And so certainly we would want to respect people's personal health information as much as possible while using what we can to assist with contact tracing. And then I think the other thing is also just the coverage of an application. So we do know, and it's very instructive from the story of Singapore, which had significant success in the early phase of the COVID-19 pandemic with a contact tracing app, but then subsequently saw a large spike in cases amongst some disenfranchised laborers and workers that lived on the island who were off the smartphone app and who were living in crowded conditions. And so we do recognize that if we are going to use something like this, it kind of has to be something that is bought into by a large majority of the population, which means ironing out a lot of the other considerations that I talked about in terms of privacy and how it actually augments our response. So it's a question that's being actively looked at, and I think if done right, it might be able to help us get some more information more quickly, but it's probably more of an accessory to the great contact tracing work that is done every single day by our public health staff at Peel Public Health. So thank you for the question, and back to you, Jody.
Dr. Lowe, our next question is live. Garfield is on the phone with us, and he's got a question about property tax deferrals. Garfield, go ahead with your question, please.
Okay, so good afternoon or good evening, panel. The question I would like to ask is in regards to property tax. There was a deferral that was put in place for 2 months at the onset of the COVID-19 in Mississauga. Is there a plan in place that it would be changed or pushed further since this thing seems to be lasting much longer than we anticipated? And the second question that I would like to ask is, I think you may have touched on it a little bit, but some of our parents are now in the nursing homes around the city of Mississauga, and we haven't heard much about which facility have been identified as COVID infected, and that is concerning to us that have parents, elderly parents in these facilities, and also have relatives who work in these facilities as well. Just not sure if those information are being released, and as to what facility and how many infections are being picked up into those facilities.
So thank you for the two-pronged question. Yes, I'm going to ask Gary to talk about the property tax deferral, which was actually for 90 days. So April, May, June is now due July, August, September, and Gary will speak to that in 1 second. With respect to the long-term care homes, we'll tee up Dr. Lowe to speak to that. But I believe we have outbreaks in 10 of our homes, and the ones we're concerned about are Camilla Care community, and they have 155 positive cases. And also a little bit concerned with Aaron Mills Lodge and Village of Aaron Meadows. So I will ask Dr. Lowe to speak about the long-term care homes and the 370 cases we have there and in those homes as well. So first over to Gary and then over to Dr. Lowe. Gary?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, and thank you, Garfield, for the question. You're correct. Council moved, actually, probably one of the first councils in Canada, one of them, to move quickly to defer taxes for 90 days. But we were clear at the time that ultimately those would have to be paid. It's actually a timely question because, as the Mayor said, April's is June, July. We were also issuing our final tax bills. But rather than doubling up in July, August, and September, our recommendation to Council is to actually do that October, November, December. So, so we will be collecting the deferred property taxes July through September, but the final instalment date, we're adjusting those so that you really have what would normally be 6 months of property tax in 3 months, that would be towards the end of the year, and therefore maximize the amount of time for people to stabilize and be able to pay. That's our recommendation for Council tomorrow. So if you tune in, it's broadcast live. You'll be able to hear the debate for that. And with that, I think I'll hand it over to the next speaker.
Thank you for that. And so thank you, Madam Mayor. Thank you, Gary. And going to the question, so we actually have all this information available on our website at peelregion.ca. So specifically peelregion.ca/coronavirus/case status. If you actually go there, we have a brand new COVID-19 dashboard that actually speaks to all the cases, but also the various outbreaks. At the top of the page, you'll see a profile of the cases, and there's actually something that there's some drop-down menus that will allow you to specifically look at the picture of Mississauga. And subsequent to that, there's also a button there where you can actually click to see details on numbers of residents' cases, passings, and staff cases and passings in various homes throughout the region. There is also another website at peelregion.ca/health/professionals/alerts. Again, that's a really long piece, so I'll go through it again. peelregion.ca/health/professionals/alerts. And that also speaks to the institution name and address as well as the confirmed e-logic agent. This actually covers not just COVID-19, but any outbreak in a long-term care home that is in the region. So this facility has been in place for quite some time, and it releases the name of the institution, the name of the agent, and when the facility went on to outbreak. So those two lists, both the overall outbreak report for Peel Healthcare Institutions, as well as the data dashboard, will certainly give you a detailed picture as to what's going on in the region. And as I can share at this point in time, just straight from the webpage, we do have, pointed out, there are approximately eight long-term care homes that are currently with COVID-19 outbreak, and five retirement homes. We've had two added from Mississauga just in the last day. So basically, those are all covered off on the PeelRegion.ca/health/professionals/alerts webpage. And
please
the dashboard is there for more of the specific details. So with that, I will thank you for the question. I encourage everyone to check out our webpage for great information, and I'll pass it over to Jody.
Thank you, Dr. Lowe. We are trying to get to as many questions as possible this evening from residents who are joining us from across the city of Mississauga to hear what the city and region are doing to help stop the spread of COVID-19, to keep residents safe and healthy. If you have a question that you'd like to ask live of the panel, please dial *3 on your keypad and you'll be put into a queue. People who are joining us using the online audio stream, there is a question field on your screen, and you can type in a question there that will also be queued, and we are trying to get to as many questions as we can this evening. Our next question comes to us live. It's Lisa. Lisa's on the line, and she's got a question about wearing masks in public. Lisa, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, good evening. So I was wondering if you're going to make, like, wearing masks mandatory in public, especially when you go into stores and stuff, because I find people are still having phone conversations and they're not wearing masks, and you notice, like, some of the employees that aren't wearing masks. So I was wondering if you're going to make the mask mandatory when you're indoors, like going to grocery stores, et cetera, stuff like that. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. I'm going to pass that over to Dr. Lowe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. It's a great question. And so when it comes to mask use, it's important to remember, similar to contact tracing applications, mask use is a bit of an accessory. Your best bet in terms of protecting yourself against COVID-19 is to maintain physical distancing as much as possible. So certainly 2 meters away from other people, and also meticulous hand hygiene, making sure that you're washing your hands, avoiding touching your face, certainly staying home if you're sick. So those are some of the best ways to reduce spread and prevent spread. Mask use has actually been looked at, and certainly the recommendation is if you are out in public and you are in a place where it is not possible to physically distance consistently, then they would recommend that a non-medical mask be used. The reason behind this is less about protecting oneself, but more about protecting others. There is great evidence now that COVID-19 can spread in the 1 to 2 days just before you develop symptoms, what is known as subclinical or pre-symptomatic spread. And so in the event that you may be brewing a COVID-19 infection, you're wearing a non-medical mask can actually help to protect others in a setting where it's not possible or it's difficult to physically distance. So, for example, of places that might be, certainly when I'm out getting groceries myself, I'm making sure that I'm wearing a non-medical mask. Previously, it was a balaclava when the weather was colder, and now it's become more of a cloth mask that I've purchased online. It's just a simple thing to keep each other safe in settings where you can't physically distance. That said, if you're in the wider outdoors, it's just a matter of maintaining that critical 2 meters distance. And that will also be effective. So it's really, at this time, the science suggests that it's an optional endeavor. And it's also, we also have to remember that there are challenges. Certainly if you're going to wear a mask, make sure you're wearing it properly so that you're not increasing your face touching, you're not forgetting to wash your hands after you take it off, et cetera. And by the way, when you do take it off, if you are using a disposable mask of some variety, please make sure you're disposing of it properly. So thank you for the question, and we'll pass it over to Jody again. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Our next question was submitted by a young person in Mississauga. Brogan is 17 years old and from Meadowvale. And Brogan asks the following: when we get to the point where we can start integrating back into society, what policies will be in place to ensure there isn't a second wave?
Oh, that's a great question. And I think we all know that keeping safe physical distancing of 6 feet or 2 meters apart from other people, maintaining good hygiene and sanitation, including washing your hands and using hand sanitizer, will be part of our life going forward indefinitely. But Dr. Lowe, what other tips can you give us for preventing that dreaded second wave? Let's hope it never comes. Dr. Lowe?
Thank you very much, Madam Mayor. And certainly just knowing that we are going to be living with COVID-19 for quite some time. I think there's a lot of different pieces that we'll have to look at, measures that will be taken at many different levels of government. You know, certainly, certainly in terms of what our decision makers will come up with to both reduce travel-related cases of COVID-19 and also things that we can do to stay safe in our own community. So, again, I think the big things will really be making sure that there is support in regulation for testing, for you know, contact tracing. I'm making sure that there are ways to enforce limits around gatherings. To some extent, I'm hopeful that this summer we may see a gradual change. But depending, it very much depends on our picture and whether we can be absolutely sure that we've got the fire under control. But I would say, you know, there's things like festivals and concerts and things that make summer summer. I would not expect to see any of that this summer, unfortunately. I certainly wouldn't want to see a situation where there's more mixing and spread, particularly as you're getting to the end of summer and getting into the colder weather where people are then incubating indoors in close contact. So I think summer is going to look very different from that broad policy perspective. But really, I think the goals will be to improve hygiene, improve measures that are taken if people are out and about for, you know, whatever reasons that they are out about, and making sure that to the extent possible we are keeping apart, keeping that distance, limiting congregations, and also limiting movements, particularly the places in the world that may still be seeing significant COVID-19 activity. So it's going to be a bunch of different policy pieces, but it's a great question, and I'm glad that at your age you're taking interest in trying to figure out how we can stop the spread and keep this under control. So thank you very much, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
Thank you very much for that question. If you're listening to us live on the call this evening and you've got a question you'd like to ask of the panel, please dial *3 on your keypad, and you'll have the opportunity to be put in the queue and ask your question out loud to the call. People who are listening to the online stream through your computer, you can type a question into the question field on your screen, and that will be put into the queue as well. Our next question comes to us from Elaine. Elaine is live with us. And she's got a question about regulated health professions. Go ahead,
yes.
Elaine.
Thank you for this excellent opportunity. I'm wondering about all of those regulated health professions that are not open at this point. I certainly hope there is a system for them ramping up their offices, their services, their staff. I'm thinking of people who are working in chiropody and physiotherapy and optometry, speech and language. These people provide so many services that are important to us, and I'm wondering, can I be hopeful that they will be back practicing in the foreseeable future, meaning really soon?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I know I'm sure waiting for my dentist office to open again, says I need an appointment. Dr. Lowe, what do you know about this? Oh, to Michelle?
I pass this one to Michelle, actually, and then I'm happy to fill in, but I imagine Michelle's got great thoughts on this.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and Dr. Lowe. Well, I'll start on this, Lawrence, and just echo the caller's general set of views, which is how important these services are to our community and to individuals out there. You know, we at running the hospital, we always say that we know that the last place anybody wants to be is actually in a hospital, and so much of our ability to stay out of hospital is to be able to access those community services and healthcare services when we need them. And so I would just agree that getting back to a place where our daily preventative care and some of our necessary care can be up and running again. And Madam Mayor, you mentioned dentists and physiotherapy clinics outside, et cetera, are all an important part of the healthcare system. But what I would say also is we know that in shutting down some of our acute care, our hospital services, that has also meant that some of our services that may not have been emergency services are still waiting to happen, and they are urgent in nature. And so what I can share with you is the province is working through a program and a set of processes that we would go through to start up those health care services that are needed inside and beyond the hospital walls. But what will be essential is the guidance from public health on how we have been able to control the spread, the community prevalence of COVID-19, to ensure that in any startup, we don't find ourselves triggering additional activity of the virus. And so it's a piece of work that we are doing collectively with public health and others, and I do believe over the next short period of time, the Premier and others in the province will have more to say about that.
Thanks very much for that.
Back to you,
our next question. Thank you. Our next question comes to us from Lucy. Lucy is live on the line, and she's got a question about cyclists. Lucy, go ahead.
Hi. My question is regarding what are the guidelines out there in terms of what's allowable for cyclists when they're out there riding their bikes? Is it okay to use some of the trails that are available, like, for instance, Riverwood or the waterfront trails? I understand that, you know, you're not encouraging to go in big packs, but if you're just a single rider, what are the guidelines out there in terms of for cyclists?
That's a great question. Thank you for it. We're trying to open up more public space for personal use so people can participate in active transportation, including walking, cycling, etc. And Jeff Wright, our Commissioner of Transportation and Works, will respond in some detail for you.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Hi, Lucy. So to answer your question, there really isn't any restrictions on the use of bicycles around the city. So whatever rules were in place before in terms of locations, then you can ride the bicycles today. I would caution, though, in terms of the provincial orders, in terms of riding in groups, but you mentioned that you wanted to be a solo cyclist. Mayor Crombie also mentioned we have been looking at locations to provide additional space for physical distancing for active transportation. And to date, we've opened two locations, one on King Street in Ward 7. That's from about Confederation to Camilla in the east, and on Glen Aaron in Ward 9. And that's from Britannia up to Aquitaine Avenue in the north. So we are looking at doing more of that in terms of opening up. And earlier in the conversation, we talked about the reduction in traffic volumes. So we're looking to take advantage of that and looking to provide some additional space for active transportation to provide physical distancing. So I hope that answers your question around the use of cyclists and the use of facilities within the city. So back to you, Jody.
Thank you, Commissioner. Our next question is from Nellie. Nellie has a very important question about Mother's Day. Nellie, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, good evening. My husband and I are both seniors, and for Mother's Day, my daughter wants to visit with her family, husband and two children. I want to keep the rules, follow the rules. Should I just say no, or could she visit?
Well, Jody, we would say just say no. The only people you want to celebrate holidays, we just finished the Easter season as well. Mother's Day is this weekend. It's a holiday, an event where people tend to gather, as was Easter, and you should not celebrate those holidays with people other than those you are isolating with. I don't know your age, but we do recommend that anyone over 70 continue to self-isolate and not see other people. I mean, people have found very unique ways to visit their parents and grandparents through windows and plexiglass, but we really don't recommend it. And the authority on this is Dr. Lowe, so I'll let him give you the goods, the straight goods on this, but I'm pretty sure he's going to say don't risk it.
Yeah, Nellie, it's a difficult question. I've had to answer this one. Thank you, Madam Mayor, as well. But I've had to answer this one at many various venues in the last little while. And as I said, you know, to some extent, this virus does prey on are essentially what we cherish the most, which is our relationships. And the big thing to remember is that if we don't interact, if we don't come together, it can't spread. And so, I know there's people who've thought of creative ways to try to see their loved ones through these times. Certainly the strong recommendation on our part is still, if you can move things virtually, kids might find it fun. You can make some, you can have them make some fun emoticons on an iPad or something along those lines, and that might be a neat and memorable way to celebrate Mother's Day. But especially given that you're a senior, it's just and knowing how this has spread and the severity and that we see in the seniors population. My thought would be as much as you can adhere to the recommendation, I think that would be at least the best for this time and this year, unfortunately. But I do wish you a happy Mother's Day, and I'll be making sure that I video call my own mother and making sure that we'll be spending some time with her as well. So thank you, and back to you, Jody.
I just wanted to say that all of us are learning all those new technologies, Nellie, whether it's FaceTime, Zoom, WebEx, whatever it is, but maybe use it this Mother's Day with your children and grandchildren. Oh, back to Jody.
Thank you for that. Susan is live with us next, and Susan's got a question about summer sports. Susan, go ahead with your question.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wondered, I know that the last town hall meeting you said that the parks will be closed till at least after Canada Day. I'm wondering if there's any thought to get given yet, or maybe it's too soon, as to whether sports will continue at all after July. I know some
question.
Of us have already pre-registered and paid.
Yeah, I'm going to ask Paul to comment. We actually did a consultation with our sports organizations earlier. I guess it was last week that we did that. And, of course, we're all wondering the same thing as are they, even if they do it safely, if only five youth are on the field at one time. We went through all the permutations. But, Paul, what are your thoughts? Our Commissioner of Community Services, and then maybe Dr. Lowe would want to add something.
Thank you, Mayor Crombie, and thank you for the question, Susan. It's a really difficult question at this point in time. We're really monitoring the situation closely. We're waiting for, as the Mayor said earlier in the call, for the number of cases to fall away and to decline for some significant period of time, I think something in the order of 14 days. That has not happened yet. So while we're, getting our sport fields and our facilities in a state of readiness, I'm not optimistic at this point that we're going to be ready from a public health point of view to open those fields, starting right after the Canada Day celebration, virtual as it might be. I think the medical officer, Phelps, just mentioned that for him, festivals for the summer of 2020 are unlikely. And again, it's because large gatherings, sports are similar, where you have close contact. I think those sports are likely that those sports will not resume, at least not early in the summer. So there is some hope, as I said earlier in the call, around golf, I think is one, tennis maybe, but the contact sports like soccer, field hockey, and so on, those are going to be later in the summer for sure and subject to public health. I'll turn it back to Jody at this point.
Thank you very much. Our next caller is Maria, and Maria has a question for Dr. Lowe about the virus being transmitted through a pool. Maria, go ahead with your question.
Yes, my question is, if I have a pool in my backyard and I want to swim today, but tomorrow my granddaughters maybe won't come and swim, or my son, and if one of us have a virus, would survive in the water, or how long it takes, or how that works?
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the question. So right now, this virus is a respiratory virus that is spread through droplet and contact, and that's really why we're recommending the physical distancing. That's why we're recommending masks when you can't physically distance. and certainly the hand hygiene and avoiding washing your face. At this time, there's no evidence that it spread through water. And so certainly the use of a pool is not necessarily a risk. I think the risk that I'm hearing described in your question, though, is your grandchildren or your son may not necessarily live in the same household as you. In which case, again, it's the same answer that I'd given previously around Mother's Day. Really, you want to try to limit the number of people that are in your bubble, the number of interactions that you could be having. And so if there's some way for them to use your pool without necessarily seeing you, then maybe you could do something along those lines. But ideally, we are highly discouraging people from visits at this point in time. Just trying to move things virtually until we manage to get this under control. But certainly if you want to swim in your pool, and I would encourage it as well, as I said in earlier, like, it's great to get outside. It's your own pool. Great to get outside. Obviously follow usual water safety protocols and all that other stuff. And certainly for everyone else as a whole, it's great to get outside, but make sure you're staying close to home and you're exercising more of the solo sort of sports, like running or cycling, not in a pack, as much as you possibly can. So thanks for the question. Certainly no evidence of spread through water, but definitely limit the people that might be coming over and using it, and or actually limit it to none, really, and ideally try to be exercising for everyone on your own as much as possible. Thank you, and I'll pass it back to Jody.
We're coming to the end of our time together this evening. There have been so many important questions and robust conversation tonight. Mayor Crombie, do you have any closing thoughts to share with our audience regarding tonight's COVID-19 telephone town hall and the city's measures to protect their health and safety?
Yes, Jody, thank you. And thank everyone for all your thoughtful questions that were asked tonight. I think this is one of our better town halls, in fact. I know that tensions and anxieties are running high, and I want to assure you that we are committed to keeping you up to date. We are doing everything in our power to slow the spread of the virus. And I want to thank all of our panelists for joining us tonight, including those who have taken time off from the front lines. So thank you. To all of you, please, please stay home as much as possible. It's the only way that we're going to save lives and prevent that second wave, that resurgence of the virus. We will continue to keep you up to date on what we're doing as a city, and updates can be found at mississauga.ca/coronavirus and also at City Mississauga on Twitter, or of course on my Twitter as well. For health information, please visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus. If you are displaying symptoms, use the province's self-assessment tool at ontario.ca/coronavirus, and please call Peel Public Health at 905-799-7700. I'll say it again, 905-799-7700. I ask you to remain strong and vigilant a little while longer so that we can get our lives back to normal, the new normal, sooner. Remember that brighter days are ahead. Be kind and thoughtful of others. Think of them, think of our seniors, and please stay healthy, stay safe, and stay well, and be sure to stay at home. Good night, Mississauga.
Thanks to everyone for their participation tonight. Remember, if you had a question and we didn't get a chance to hear from you tonight, you can find updates online. For health questions related to COVID-19, visit peelregion.ca/coronavirus. For questions about city service impacts, visit mississauga.ca/coronavirus. Thanks for being part of this important event. Thanks for your interest and for your questions, and have a good evening.